Dear Shooter, celebrating the assassination of anyone is absolutely horrible. Quote, one of the most horrifying and surprising evolutions we have witnessed among our widespread campus network is the rapid movement away from tolerating opposing ideas and respectful debate to the deployment of obscene bully tactics from the left. Charlie Kirk.
But they did state that when these guns are put together with different pieces or whatever, it's like an organ transplant.
Yeah, I got an F in shooting once.
It's a perishable skill.
Quitting?
Yes. My favorite death threat I ever got, the guy left his email address on.
He's just going to make it rain in Spanish, that's all.
Here's 20 cents, here's 20 cents, here's 20 cents. Wow, you need to make
a clip-on. It's not a strap-on.
2 weeks for all that? That isn't training, that's camp.
You couldn't read a brochure on all that shit in that time.
Prepare to enter the space where nothing is safe, nothing is sacred, and offensive conversation is encouraged. Welcome to the Dear Shooter Podcast and your hosts, Jason Wilson, Brandy, and Jason Croteau.
Talk about nothing being sacred. When are we going to actually be able to have a happy topic again?
Well, it depends on your definition of happy.
Well, it's something we can have fun with, because this sucks.
Well, it's very symptomatic of the conversation we're seeing in the country.
Yes, fair.
It sucks, but it is what it is, right? And I'm going to choose to look on the brighter side of some things. I have boundaries, and I've set them for a exact reason. Right? So that allows me to be positive about my world. It's a self-preservation action. Otherwise, yeah, I'm probably going to catch an assault charge and vote from a rooftop.
It's not even that. I mean, everything in the last 9 months has just been doom and gloom, dire, and now we have the assassination of Charlie Kirk. I mean, it's like the culmination of over a decade of leftist violence.
The proverbial straw that broke the camel's back.
I think you're right on that.
And I watched the comments come out of nowhere on both sides. People went right to taking arms, saying that, sorry, left, you don't get to shoot at us and then try and take our guns away.
Hell, I mean, they have a point.
It's a valid statement. It's a valid statement. But then you watched Evil Incarnate, and the celebration of somebody getting murdered was just offensive as it possibly could be.
Right.
Yeah, anybody. It doesn't matter. Okay, so do you like Joe Biden? I don't like Joe Biden. But if somebody assassinate him, you don't celebrate that. That is a horrible, horrible thing.
We're supposed to be an involved society, and above, that's how you solve your problems.
No, and if you want, like, okay, you use Joe Biden as an example. And from the moment he was, well, propped up as the Democrat candidate, I kind of felt sorry for him, because we all knew that his mind wasn't there, that he was not physically, mentally capable of doing that job. But he was propped up. He was thrown into office, likely by cheating. And this was a man who wasn't up to the job. And I looked at it as elder abuse.
Well, he couldn't finish a statement, let alone his term.
Right.
Well, and then they ridiculed him for that and kept him silenced and put him in a corner for what? Because they did this to him?
Right.
He is in the place in his life that he should have spent the rest of his life with his family.
Agreed. And that's where you see the auto pin come in. And the more we learn, as time always does, kind of shows things up.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't him.
It wasn't. And I may have been completely polar opposite from him in the realm of ideas, but he was still in his final term in politics. Yeah, that was flat out abuse.
I agree. I totally agree. I was of the mind where I felt kind of sorry for him, to an extent. He has had 40 years of his own policies.
Agreed.
That had a stain on them. But he was still an American. He may have hated America, but he was an American.
He was. And
assassination death?
No.
Was not in the cards.
No. And I mean, I will say this, and I'll probably get hate for it, but I don't, you know, he doesn't deserve what he's going through now. You know, I think we all know about the dementia. I think there was some kind of cancer that he's been diagnosed with now. You know, I don't wish that on anybody.
No, but time's going to get us all.
It will.
It has a very unique way of justice.
Yeah, well, what we did not see was justice last week.
That's true.
You know, you're looking at a very, very influential man in the prime of his life. Turning point was a $100 million advocacy group.
The thing that just baffles me and I can't get away from every time I look at what social media is talking about and how this all came about is this heinous action made him right.
Yes.
He has said all along that violence happens when debate stops.
Right.
And he was willing to talk to anybody
mm-hmm.
about most anything and have a logical conversation. He actually really welcomed that. Most folks wanted to yell obscenities at him and call him names.
Right.
But he was there to have a conversation.
He was. And Brandy and I were having this conversation this morning that, you know, and I always said, like, he was not a motivational speaker. He was a debater. And he wanted to have a conversation. He wanted to change minds. And he wanted conservative students on campus feel okay to be conservative.
He wanted young people to think.
And the reason that he was so hated by the left was because he could take, and I watched him debate some very, very intelligent people, but the way he was able to make them inviscerate their own ideas just by asking a question, that's what made him hated. Because when you have, and here's the problem in our society, when we started to allow how we felt to be as valid as a fact. So these people would debate Charlie, and they would go up to him with their feelings, and he would throw facts in the way. Facts that most of the time these people didn't even know, you know. And then when you take a feeling, and now it's shattered, and now you have a fact that's thrown in the way of your feelings, you're doubly mad. You're doubly devastated.
The only play they had left was insults.
That's right.
Or violence.
Or violence.
Because that's when the conversation stopped. They didn't have anything else to use.
Right.
And then we see the left in this country be that.
And they have been for over a decade now. The left, you know, and this whole assassination culture, this goes back to Andrew Breitbart.
All right, got my attention.
You know, when conservatives really started becoming effective in the arena of ideas, and you know, you go back to, you know, Rush Limbaugh was definitely a pioneer. Andrew Breitbart was huge. They swatted him
hard,
and he was killed as a result. But that was when we started to understand the left. They don't want their ideas argued. They want to subdue that speech.
They don't want anybody to think differently than them. And if you do, that's when the insults and the rhetoric comes out.
Well, if you think differently than them, and this is the problem the last 8 years, 10 years, is they can't beat you in the arena of ideas. So they're going to call you a racist, a Nazi, a bigot. Okay, a homophobe, you know,
whatever
misogynist,
flavor of the day.
Which the problem is now they've overused those. And but what we're into a situation now is they have spent so much time and indoctrinated their constituents to believe that the right are Nazis and they're homophobes. And if you look at it, you know, think about it. And they always try to compare it to 1930s Germany. Well, if you were in 1930s Germany and you would have assassinated Hitler and prevented World War II and the Holocaust, you'd have been a hero, right?
You wouldn't have understood what you did in that time frame.
You wouldn't have.
The perspective would have been lost.
Right. But
and you're coming to an uphill rant, and I'm going to cut you off.
Oh, it's not a rant. I mean,
you're chumming it up. The other side has started chumming for monsters.
Well, I have for a long
they've
time.
They've indoctrinated the people, and they've dehumanized the other side to the point of hopelessness in conversation, which creates violence, is the only option. They don't have insults that are effective anymore because they've used them all too much. Now what's left?
Well, that's just it. They've lost the debate.
And we've talked about this 100 times. When conversation stops, violence is what happens. However, we've been watching this for now 20 years brewing.
Mm-hmm.
The violence that they're going to bring has a dial, and they can ratchet it up and down as they choose. At some point, they're going to push us too far. And we have a switch.
Mm-hmm.
It's on or it's off. And I really do not want that switch turned on. I do not. That actually makes me terrified.
Well, with their latest act, they're pretty much, they're working on that
they're
switch.
Pushing that switch pretty good. But if we all stop and think about what that means, that's horrific.
Well, you you hit on a point, and I saw a quote, and I apologize, I'm paraphrasing here, but it's that you can't radicalize the left, or you can't radicalize the right, because we think. You know, yeah, okay, fine. You have your fringes. You have your fringes everywhere, but you cannot radicalize the right because we're a big tent, and there's a lot of ideas flowing around.
With a logic filter, though, we talk it through
exactly, and we actually consider consequences before we take action.
Weird.
Right. So, but with the assassination of Kirk, I think everybody has gone, all right, there's a problem here, and I need to take it upon myself to spread the word and try and change some minds and try and right the ship.
Which is what Charlie was doing.
He was doing.
He was trying to have dialogue. Open conversations, getting young people to think outside the indoctrination that happens on college campuses.
Right.
They hated him because he was effective.
He was.
Nobody gets shot for speaking the truth.
Well, apparently they do.
There's the line that we're crossing.
Right. But I think, you talk about the Facebook post that you saw and people going, okay, it's time to go to war. And I even said, you know, is this the time that we go to war against domestic terrorists? Because that's what this kid was. He was a domestic terrorist.
And they want to make him out to be this lone wolf. They acted on his own. We call that a patsy, if you study.
Right.
He was just somebody that was motivated and pushed and then hung out to dry. So they can't be complicit.
No. And even Kash Patel came out today and said that, you know, they've gone through his phone, they've gone through his computer, and they have found communications, text and email, that he had been planning this and that he was talking to somebody else about this. So, you know, the lone wolf thing doesn't play. You know, I think what this has done is it's empowered us, and I think what you're going to see, not necessarily, you're not going to see violence coming from our side. What you're going to see, though, is a shift, and it's not going to be the live and let live policy anymore. It's going to be the no, I'm going to start speaking out against this crap because it's wrong.
More people need to stand up for what's right.
Mm-hmm. So have you all seen the movie The Mockingbird?
Ooh, no.
Or was it Mockingjay? Whatever that chick from The Hunger Games or whatever
yeah,
it was.
Oh, yeah.
She is. Erica Kirk is going to become that. Oof. And she's going to have a huge support rally behind her. And we may not start a war per se, but it'll be a war of words. And she's going to be heavily supported. And that woman's going to be loud.
Well, she doesn't need to be too awful loud. She's already got the volume. She's got every piece of reach that she's going to need to be very successful at it right now.
Well, and from what I understand, competition-wise, Erica Kirk was the only person that ever beat Charlie Kirk in a debate.
And I can totally see a guy like Charlie going, all right, yeah, that's hot.
So just be prepared. You angered the mama bear and the wife, and she's taking over.
Good for her. I will support her every way I can.
Oh, absolutely.
So it's the Mockingjay is what it was. So if you've never watched the movie, watch it because that is what she's going to become.
And I think this is also kind of a culmination, and this is something that I've been said for years. Like there's nothing more dangerous than a Democrat out of power because they feel that they have nothing to lose.
Irrelevancy is terrifying.
Right. But
they do, because you said this kid had communications. I'd be very, very interested in with whom.
I think
that we'll ever find out.
Well, I don't know.
I think the FBI will know.
I think, yeah.
But I don't know that we'll ever know.
Yeah, we may never know.
There is a level of keeping public discord.
There is, however, somebody needs to go in trouble. I know everyone in government up there, they don't go to jail. They just get their little hands smacked and told, no, go think about it in your room for a while. This one needs to go to prison,
agreed,
and then they need to let us know.
But what I would offer is there's going to be a level of information censorship that has to happen from that level of prosecution government, because what they're doing is making sure that our pitchforks and our torches don't get picked up.
Well, that's why they need to pick this person up first and
agreed,
have them.
Agreed.
But then they can let the public know.
We're not going to know about it.
I would.
I don't think it should be a secret.
I don't think it should be either. As you stand there with your pitchfork and your torch in your hand.
I don't plan on taking them out. I'll let the right channels take them out unless they show up on my porch and then, you know, no one else knew you were here.
No, but I would offer that the torches and the pitchforks have already been used. And we used them at the ballot box in 2024.
And we'll use them again.
Yeah.
Because they woke us up.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's what we're witnessing. The left has lost all control and power in this country, and they're losing it even further, even more rapidly. Nobody can stand their policies. If you look at California, you know, anybody who really had anything to gain in California has left. The highest taxes in the country, the highest gas in the country. You know, they can't even keep the reservoirs full to fight fires.
We see it happen in New York.
Well,
with this new mayor election they got going on there.
Yeah.
J.P. Morgan says they're going to pull up shop and leave.
Oh, yeah. A lot of big names. J.P. Morgan, I've seen Schwab's going to pull out. I've seen...
If they pull those guys out, Wall Street's done.
Trump's leaving. Well, Wall Street's not done. They don't even need to be there anymore.
They don't need Wall Street anymore. That's
right.
My point. They can go from anywhere.
Well, and there's actually a lot of firms that have, they've moved their headquarters to Florida because they're like, why should we pay the taxes and pay all this money for these massive buildings in New York? We don't need to. We don't need to be there.
Changing times.
So, you know, and you know, you've got this Mondani that wants to, he wants to take over not federalize, but he wants to take over the grocery stores. He's gonna ban any kind of firearm. Mm. You know, he's gonna raise taxes. I mean, he's claiming raising taxes to like 60%.
Yikes!
I mean, who's gonna stay?
No.
Silly Democrats trying to ban firearms. That'd be silly, because then who would they pay to shoot the people they don't like?
Well, and that's another thing. Like, this whole assassination thing. It was a bolt action rifle. The one rifle that they say that civilians have a right to own, because it's for hunting.
The rifle that they've chosen to say they found in the woods. And now that very well may be a rifle similar to the one used, but I highly doubt that that's what was used. And I'm pretty sure there was an optic on it. I mean, there's enough technology today that's very accessible that iron sights out of a Mauser probably wasn't used.
Oh, see, the rifle I saw had an optic.
Yeah, I saw a Mauser without an optic on it. I mean,
I'll bet it was some kind of stock picture somebody had.
Probably. Because
the rifle that I saw, and they held it up in a press conference.
But to Brandy's point, I got to see an interesting map overlay. I was out at the NRA board meeting, and one of the guys, staffer at the NRA, goes, "Hey, look at this." And the past 20 years, he had accumulated the data of the violence that was committed that's called gun violence. And he overlaid it on the country and then brought up the map of red, blue.
Hmm?
It matched.
Yep.
Perfectly.
Yeah, and I've seen that map.
That's a shocking telltale concentration center of demographics. If you're a guy that studies society and marketing and is a numbers guy, that map is pretty darn interesting.
Mm-hmm. And even if you delve a little further into that, yes, the highest crime areas are all blue. But if you delve even further into that, you'll find that about 80% of the crime committed in those blue areas are gang violence.
Still, and it classified as gun violence, which the left wants to beat us over.
Right. But, you know, and look
at
your
own backyard up first.
Well, exactly. And I think Trump's doing right to challenge these, you know, Democrat mayors and governors to, hey, you saw what we did in D.C. Let us come in. Let us help you clean up your city. It's real easy. You arrest people for committing crimes and you don't let them go with no bail.
Correct. It's a real simple thing about consequence. Psychologically, people go, hmm. And that hesitation is sometimes enough to stop them from going further.
Well, it is. You know, one of the things that we used to study, you know, back in the day when there was this whole big thing about the one-shot stop. You know, we debunked that whole theory because it included non-fatal injuries and even non-injuries. You know, if it included statistics of, okay, guy's coming after me with a knife, I pull my gun and put a round into the ground, and the guy goes, "Oh crap, I didn't know you had a gun," and runs away. That was considered a one-shot stop. But it wasn't a physiological stop. So the data was skewed.
Yeah, it's interesting how you can twist statistics as I study.
Well, I took statistics, and that's the first thing they teach you is how to twist them. How to mitigate them to tell your story. It has changed my view on, well, this study says, well, who conducted the study and who paid the bill? Those are the first two things I want to know. Because that'll tell me if it's for real.
Or if it fits your narrative.
Right.
Because that's all they're doing, is they're taking numbers to have a talking point.
Right. Well, and you look at a lot of, you know, when you look at a lot of polls, and you have to be careful, you know, when they talk about presidential polls and gubernatorial polls and mayoral polls and this. What was their sample? Because I've seen in California where, you know, because Gavin Newsom wants to bump up his polls, you know, they'll go and they'll ask 10,000 Democrats, but only 500 Republicans.
That's not a fair statement.
No, it's not. But they do it all the time. Mm-hmm. This is how they skew the statistics. Oh, man. We got to pay some bills.
All right.
And we'll be right back.
10th Mountain Whiskey? Can you even call yourself a shooter? Okay, Mr. AK guy that only drinks vodka. 10th Mountain has that too. Still too much? Maybe that cordial would suit your unrefined palate. But for you real pipe hitters out there, the single malt can't be beat. Whiskey is an acquired taste. And if you don't like whiskey, I suggest you acquire some taste. Just enter Dear Shooter at checkout for 15% off your order. 10th Mountain Whiskey and Spirits Company. It's whiskey worth fighting for.
When it comes to your personal security, you want the best. And your training shouldn't be an exception. WyoTac is your one stop for all of your education and training needs. Covering competitive, defensive, and hunting classes, as well as medical, fieldcraft, and survival courses. With over a decade of experience and with a network of resources, WyoTac can help to meet your goals. When no one is coming, you have to rely on yourself. Make sure you know what to do when the time comes. WyoTac. Empowerment through self-reliance.
All right, so moving forward, like... We've been kind of beating a dead horse here. What do you do going forward? Like, because I'm not going to resort to violence. Like, that's not how we change minds. That's not how we move forward.
Well, and if you watch the comments coming out and you see that offensive, ignorant post, or you know somebody that's going down that rabbit hole of regurgitation of a soundbite that is just incorrect. I've had really good success in asking the question, interesting, why do you think that?
Yeah.
I don't do it intrusively, but I really want to understand why they just made that statement. Either they really believe it, then we have bigger issues, or they're just regurgitating a soundbite that they saw that resonated with something that's going on in their life.
Right.
Right? And it's nothing more than that the symptom of the social media, right? And you can usually, with your friends, correct that. Because you ask a couple questions, and they're like, well, I didn't think about it like that. And now they're softened up. You can have dialogue.
Right.
But taking a page from Charlie's notebook, have dialogue. Okay? If you alienate the other side, they dehumanize you. And then you become an enemy, which is hard to come back from.
No, and I think you're right. And I think the way to approach that is ask a question. And don't try and ask, you know, be careful. Like, don't try to go after the gotcha question.
Well, and don't be on the fight when you ask it. Just
no.
Honestly, curious. Why do you think that?
Right. And I've had great success going, I don't understand that. Explain it to me.
And I put humor into it. Explain it to me like I'm four. Because I'm missing something.
Right. And you got to be careful with that one because that can come across insulting.
Well, it is slightly condescending because I truly disagree with everything you just said.
Right.
But I need to understand it because if you're going to stay in my friend circle, I got to at least respect where you're coming from.
Right.
And that's probably the key of it, respect. We can disagree and we can still be friends. I am totally cool with that. As long as I know that you've got a position that you believe and you have reasons for believing said such.
Right. Yeah, well, and I totally agree with you. I think that we can all have disagreements. I mean, I have people that, you know, I truly respect and have been friends with for years, but I disagree with them here and there. But the nice thing is because we're logical adults, we can have that conversation. And even if we walk away still in disagreement, it's not a hatred of each other. Okay. And I think that's where we need to try and get to as a society.
And there's the old polite adage, and it was immortalized in a famous cartoon. If you don't have something nice to say, just don't.
Right.
I mean, I'm not going to do the whole thumper thing, but
oh,
we all
on.
Know how that rolls out, right?
Right.
And Grandma got it right. You're going to catch a lot more flies with sugar than you are with vinegar.
Well, I don't know. I'll tell you what, the flies we've had this year.
This bar is plagued with mutant flies.
God, it's crazy this year.
And I'm pretty sure when you kill one, 10 rise in its place.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, great. So we're dealing with the Hydra.
Yeah. No. We've all seen the movie.
But no, I think you're absolutely right. And... you know, ask, and those of you that would get angry for having your position challenged, you do it to me all the time on this show.
I do, on purpose. Because, look, getting angry is okay. Pushing buttons is okay. It means that the topic matters to you.
Right.
I'm excited when somebody has a passion for what they're talking about, even if I don't understand it or agree with it.
Right.
Because they've thought it through, at least to their level of understanding. That's why asking the question is so effective, because now they have to think it through to articulate it
right.
again.
Right. But, I mean, yeah, like I said, you do it to me all the time. And it, you, okay, and I'll admit, you have changed my mind on some things. There have been things I've changed your mind on. I harped on, you know, we argued about, you know, charging handle versus bolt release for years.
Sure. And they're both effective methods.
Right.
But I understand there's a training initiative for consistency's sake.
Right.
And I hadn't considered that at the time of using
it. And I've never said that it was faster. I just...
In the method of training, it makes a lot of sense.
Right.
I can see the methodology. I don't always use it myself.
And I don't either. And I do make exceptions, but as a general rule.
I used to carry on an empty chamber with a 1911.
Well, that's just
dumb. It was just dumb. It was straight up dumb. And I've evolved since then. But I also carry a striker-fired pistol.
Right.
And the whole world changed when technology like that came about for me.
Well, and that's just it.
I also carry concealed now, not open.
Right.
So the methodology and mindset completely changed.
Well, but that brings back another point, too. And here's the thing. It is okay for your opinions to evolve.
Exactly.
As long as you can articulate it.
That's right.
You know, and that's one of the things I always say when you are vetting an instructor. Ask them, what have you changed your mind on?
It's a great question.
Because that shows someone who thinks, who actually looks at changing technologies and changing techniques and changing training and will accumulate that and go, all right, well, this is good and I'm going to adopt that. Or this sucks and here's why.
Back in the day, Weaver stance was what you did.
Right.
That's changed.
Well, that's because we found out that's not how people act in a fight.
But if I square off with somebody, that's a good stance to get into if I'm going to go fist to cuffs.
Yes.
If I stand A-frame in a fight, I'm going to get my ass kicked.
Right.
In a gunfight, it's different.
It's totally different.
I can move without compromising my own position.
Right.
Everything changes for a reason, and that is that evolution piece that we're talking about. Ideas are no different.
No, and I think that's what we need to really push going forward is, and I think that would be an effective tactic. Make it okay for someone to change their mind.
Agreed.
Or evolve an opinion, or evolve, you know, their stance on a topic. 'Cause there's a lot of things there, you know, they're political opinions. I have evolved all the time because of new information or, you know, looking at, you know, that ye old law of unintended consequences because I found a consequence that I hadn't considered.
Sure. And life's funny that way because it doesn't ever let up. It's relentless.
Right.
Everything you ever needed to know you learned in kindergarten, keep your hands to yourself and be polite.
It's a great foundation. I will say I've learned a few things since then.
Yes, but everybody has forgotten just the basics you learned in kindergarten. Share.
Well, I will offer, forgotten's a strong term. There are an entire generation that was never taught that that's how they did things. There's been a parenting disconnect, allowing kids to get away with absolutely everything because the parents wanted to be their friends when they really needed a parent.
Which was odd to me. And not to get into this whole generational debate, you know, we're all Gen X. But back in our day, if you had a disagreement with somebody, you were going to the playground and somebody was coming back bloody, but it got settled.
And we all recognize that as guys, we can do that.
Right.
It's a gender thing. Girls, they don't do it that way.
No.
They spend the rest of their life trying to figure out how to ruin the others.
No, I took care of shit in school.
Yeah, but you're the least girl I know.
But here's what I don't understand is like, the millennials, the ones that came after us, right? They had helicopter parents. Mm-hmm. So how is it that they feel so entitled to, I guess the internet is a problem because now you can anonymously sit there and tear somebody down and say vile things and there's no consequence.
Well, they've been enabled. They've been empowered. They've been validated to go along, to get along, to not have the conflict. And they've gotten away with no consequences.
Yeah.
And that is starting to show its ugly head in our society.
I just kind of want to point out, didn't Gen X create the millennial?
Yeah.
So the helicopter parenting was us?
It was.
I'm just going to point it out.
Well, it was an overcorrection on our part because our parents locked us out of the house and said, don't come home until the lights came on. And
beating you to the end of your life was real.
Yeah, I mean, well, don't come home until the lights come on. And the only time they came looking for us is, they were coming to look for us to beat our ass for something. And
well, I will even offer, there's decisions that were made as a young parent for me. I was living in a city. I was watching the city devolve into this no consequence type of environment as a society. And pretty much the moment I had a child, I left the city because I didn't want my child raised in the environment where she could be an asshole to somebody at the mall, driving down the road, and have the mindset that she'll never see them again. So she didn't have consequences.
Well, it's, there's other reasons I also moved out of the city. But my reasons were, when we were young, we went outside, rode bikes, played in the dirt, went to the park unattended. You couldn't do that in the city. You couldn't let them in your backyard because somebody would take your kids from your backyard.
That's right. The city devolved into a place where the security was an issue, the society was an issue, and every place we see these social woes that we're talking about, mm-hmm. they have an abundance of people.
Right.
You don't see them in small towns. That kind of stuff doesn't show up much.
No, that's why I was glad when I moved here, there's kids riding their bikes.
No.
And playing outside and going to the park and, things that you can't do in a city.
Well, and even bigger issues. I think we talked about it here a few years ago. Biden decided to start busing illegals onto our reservation, thinking that we wouldn't know the difference.
Well, they blended in quite well, actually.
Well, they did, but our Indians don't have MS-13 tattoos on their face. And there wasn't a lot of attention given to it, but the locals here, we played cowboys and cartels. And we don't have that problem anymore. Now,
did our Indians because our Indians.
They didn't want them either.
They don't like outsiders.
To that point, I had a fantastic story a couple Thanksgivings ago. In the middle of being shipped into our reservation, I was standing at the grocery store. Checkout line was kind of long, and the folks at the checkout were trying to get their multiple EBT cards to work to buy alcohol and a couple things at the grocery store. And there was people in line grumbling about how long it was taking because their cards were declined, this, that, the other, right? And this guy turns around and he has the MS-13 tattoos all up and down his face. And he lifts up his shirt and shows everybody in line an empty holster. Well, at some point he did have a gun there because he had a holster. And all I went was, "You're empty, dude." And he was embarrassed. He put his shirt down, and he grabbed his squaw and left. That probably wasn't a very PC term, calling her a squaw. But that happened in Riverton, Wyoming,
mm-hmm.
during that time frame. I don't see those folks anymore.
No. No, they were very quietly run out of the county, is basically how that went.
And I got asked when I told that story one time, what would you have done if he'd had a gun? I would have put my hand on mine and stayed quiet, waiting for him to draw. Had he drawn, I'd have shot him. Consequences, right?
Right.
But the folks I was talking to were horrified that I had shot him. Said, no. If he'd have started that draw stroke, he meant to hurt somebody.
Right. And the you got to understand that. You got to understand how fast that happens.
It happens really fast. Mm-hmm. But our society in the smaller towns doesn't see that often. It happens a lot in the bigger cities.
It does. And here's the problem with the bigger cities. And I feel bad for people that live in these bigger cities, especially with the ones that are liberal controlled, which unfortunately is most of them. You take an action like that, you know, an obvious MS-13 gang member lifts up his shirt and draws a gun and you shoot him. Now you're the one being prosecuted.
My stuff's getting confiscated. I'm going to jail.
Right. And this guy, if he survives, is getting off with no bail.
And he can sue you.
Like, right.
Now, we saw this played out recently on a train. Guy
yes.
stabs a gal riding on the train looking at her phone, and he kills her. And the bystanders all sat there and watched it happen. In shock or disconnected, whatever you want to call it, they didn't even help the girl dying. Didn't even try.
No. Apparently, we all care about Ukraine until then.
Now, the guy gets caught because they had him on camera. I mean, it was a pretty easy catch.
Right.
And they haul him in front of the judge. Judge lets him go.
Right.
For an arraignment later without bail or bond.
Yeah, no.
So for murder. For murder, that's which right. that's unheard
that's
of.
That's first degree.
Right. Well, definitely first degree. And he did it. Camera showed that he did it. Evidence was pretty overwhelming in the case. So the feds got involved.
Yeah.
And prosecuted. That's about the only time they get involved on a murder charge is when the local folks aren't doing their job.
And I've asked this question. Like, you know, obviously, and the guy had a rap sheet, like a mile freaking long to start with, and then the judge lets him off because we're going to give you an arraignment in 3 months.
Right.
With no bail, no bond, okay, and the feds found this egregious enough to get involved. So is there any kind of recourse to take on that judge? I mean, because he's culpable for letting a murderer out on the street.
Absolutely. There's enough case law in that deal where that judge is in trouble. There's a lot of things that are happening behind the scenes on that whole deal. Again, we probably won't see it all, and that judge's name will change, and it'll all be somebody new sitting in the seat. But, yes. There are things that they're doing to that judge to make sure that doesn't happen again.
That something that egregious and that obvious, and for the judge to let him out like that.
But none of that helps what we're talking about today of society standing there watching it happen, doing nothing.
Well, I think there's two reasons for that. Number one is just natural human response. You got fight, flight, freeze. Those are the three basics. There's some others that are more nuanced. But I think most people's, and especially anymore, their natural reaction is to freeze. And that is from decades long indoctrination of don't do anything, go tell the authority.
Well, there was 25 people on that train car.
Right.
Nobody, and I mean nobody,
right,
helped her or tried to restrain him.
Right. Well, I think the other problem with that is fear of prosecution, because we don't prosecute the murderer, obviously.
Yeah,
we prosecute the good guy.
And the worst yet is that complacency is a cancer.
It is.
And the not getting involved really showcased that.
It does. And there is a human psychology behind that, especially in larger crowds, is you... people tend to assume that somebody else will help. So they don't.
Right. I've never been wired that way.
I don't think we are.
How I was raised, whatever you want to look at, but I'm not wired that way. I sometimes foolishly put myself in situations I probably shouldn't.
I think that's a combination of the way that you were raised, and I think we were all raised that way. And it's also a combination of where we live. I mean, we talk about being from a small town, and we all kind of understand we're all we've got.
Correct.
We don't have a million people that are going to come to our aid.
Well, I raised in a small town. I knew at a very young age that if I did something dumb, I was getting caught.
Right.
It wasn't even a consideration. I was getting away with it.
Right.
Because somebody was going to see it or know about it somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And when that village takes notice of something, you get your ass beat several times.
Right.
It's not worth it. You learn very early on that there are consequences, but that's a small town thing.
It is, and you're absolutely right. That's been lost on a lot of society, I think. And you know, not to disparage cities. I've been in some very beautiful, large cities. But I think that attitude gets lost.
I agree.
And unfortunately, until that attitude starts to change, and like I said, I think the way we make that change is have the dialogue. You know, ask the question that makes somebody think about their position, and make it okay. You know, we get so obsessed with these safe spaces, right? But create the safe space for that person to evolve.
Yeah. Safe spaces.
You know, challenge them, and you know, and that's one of the things, and I think this is something that Charlie would stand behind too. You know, he was a very religious man. And one of the things that religion talks about is, you know, especially in marriage, that's supposed to be a safe space, but it's also supposed to be a space in which spouses challenge each other to be better.
Correct.
And I think that we as a society need to look at that, challenge each other to be better, but make it safe to evolve. Because I think that's one of the roadblocks, is that we've made it so, you know, you're not allowed to change your mind in light of new facts or new information.
Yes, you are.
You absolutely are. But I think society has made it, you know, where you can't do that.
And I would challenge our listeners.
Because it's too many times that somebody has changed a position and immediately called a hypocrite.
Agreed. And I would challenge our listeners out there, take a moment, get involved, ask the questions. You're going to feel better about the interaction overall anyway.
Right.
Because you may be that person in the conversation that sets it a different direction.
And don't expect an immediate change. You know, think about it. You know, you're dropping a pebble into a pond.
And you can't demonize the other side and discount them by being evil or just an idiot. And you can't do those insults and be effective.
No.
You got to have that logic filter of let's have a dialogue about it.
Mm-hmm.
And be honest.
Yep.
And if you're wrong, you're wrong.
And let them talk. It may be the most asinine thing you've ever heard, but let them get the thought out.
But don't be the left and throw out insults.
Right.
Don't dehumanize them and go right to violence.
Right. And don't listen.
Better than that.
Yeah. Hear them. Because you may pick up something where you're able to go, okay, I understand why you think that. But have you considered this?
Correct.
You know, have that conversation. And I think if we could, you know, I know Mark Levin says that we need more Paul Revere's, you know, spread the word, right? But I think Charlie Kirk got it right. Go change a mind.
Have a conversation.
Because if we could have, you know, if we can walk away from this absolute tragedy with a million Charlie Kirks out there.
It'll change tomorrow.
It will. And I think it will change it for the better.
Agreed.
So, wow. Came up on time quick.
As we do.
We do. So, I guess until this week, blame your own way of thinking. Try and change it.
Agreed.